Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on this first day of summer. My buddy John, engineering and producing the program. As we launch into the summer season, it is Wednesday, June 21st, 2023. So we've got the summer solstice with us. Our show, 12 and a half years into the radio project, broadcasting from the Green Things Zilkalo Village Studio, which is part of the Bustos Media growing campus. I think we're going to have five radio stations under one roof here very soon. But our radio station is 1030. KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. That means anywhere in the world, by the computer, just go to buckmastershow.com. We'll take the live feed, and you can hear the program live. And then if you missed the program, we've got all of our podcasts. 12 and a half years of content is archived for you at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. First day of summer, very appropriately, we should be talking about Tucson Parks and Recreation. So I decided to bring in Lara Hamway. Lara is the director of City of Tucson's Parks and Recreation Department. Lara, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm happy it's summer. It's my favorite time of year.
And this will be your third summer.
That's correct.
Yeah, let's see. You joined the team, City of Tucson team, part of City Manager Mike Ortega's cabinet, I think the second week of 2021. So that gives you about 2.5 years now heading up the Parks and Recs department. And right now you've got a huge team you're overseeing right now. Summertime.
That's correct. Summertime's our heaviest time of year for staffing. We are running probably about 1,000 employees right now, 230 full-time, and then the rest are all part-time employees that are working either at pools or summer camps.
And the footprint is large, 131 parks in your portfolio, but you mentioned pools. This is the Tucson Parks and Recreation Summer Palooza that's going on at City Pools. What's the footprint for pools look like in this city?
So currently we have 20 pools that are open for the summer. We really made a concerted effort to get them staffed and get them operational so that everybody can go and enjoy their neighborhood pool.
And what's it take to get a pool up and ready? I know during the pandemic, a lot of pools were closed.
Yeah, so the ability to staff the pools was challenging. And in the early days of the pandemic, also with COVID restrictions, it was very unknown, like what could you allow people to do in a pool? So some of our pools did stay closed through COVID. And then last year we struggled because we couldn't get enough lifeguards hired. We kind of lost that whole season of certification during COVID. So this year we made it a mission. It took us about 9 months. We did a lot of active recruiting at high schools and in public events. And so we were successful. So we're currently at about 260 lifeguards on board. And that allowed us to get the 20 pools open. And in addition to that, we did quite a lot of capital investment in our pools, inspecting the filters, the boilers, the decks.
It's expensive to run a just from being a pool owner myself, and I know that many call it a big chemical drain because it's so expensive. I can only imagine you guys put a lot of money into the pools.
We do.
And I mean, just to keep the chemicals going and you mentioned the lifeguards, but then there's the maintenance of the pools.
That's a big deal. It is a big deal. Every week we've got to vacuum those pools. We have to check the filters to make sure that they're cycling the water through. And then, of course, like you said, chemicals to keep the water quality consistent to what is make it healthy for people to swim in. And then we do learn to swim classes and aqua fit classes. And then, like you just mentioned, our summer paloozas, which is where we're trying to really activate the pools in a recreation style. So people remember that the pools are there and come together with their neighbors and enjoy a fun evening.
Yeah, so the next one, I've got the list in front of me. It's Saturday, June 24th, 5 to 7. Welcome to the Jungle. What's that going to be about?
Well, we're very fortunate at the Ark to have really creative minds. And so I think they're going to have floating animals and just a jungle theme that is built into inviting the family to come out and just enjoy an evening at the pool.
And we should say where that is. It's by the zoo, right?
Yes, that is the big white tent adjacent to the zoo.
So there'll be these Palooza events that will go through July. Best way to find out, just go to your website or what?
Yeah, the absolute best way would be to visit our website at TucsonAZ.gov. But also follow us on social media. We do post through Instagram and Facebook all of our events that are coming up, as well as Twitter. So we really do try to use multiple ways of getting the word out. We're very fortunate all of the ward offices also include our information in their newsletters.
I mean, the hiring situation is so difficult right now, Lara. People, I mean, anywhere you go, there's a we need help sign out. So that was really challenging, wasn't it? Not only with the lifeguards, but to get some part-timers in all different areas for the recreation department.
It's true, but that's why we hit the streets. We tried to be very creative. We did a silent disco, which we knew our target audience are teens. And so silent discos are something that is trending and popular among that age group. And just providing them that opportunity, they could come in, they could network, they could participate in the silent disco, win raffle prizes. I mean, that and much other things that we did, it's a layered effect. And I think that's why we were so successful.
We've talked about pools, but what is the splash pad? That seems to be something that's a lot of areas of recreation departments are moving in that direction, including Tucson. What is it?
So a splash pad is essentially the glorified garden hose sprinkler system that you grew up
that
with.
That one I can identify with that. So can John on the other side of the glass. We all remember that, right, John? Running through the sprinkler, right?
So imagine that giant style. It could be a flower that's squirting out water. It could be water bubbling from a concrete base. But it's an equalizer because you don't need to learn to know how to swim to be able to enjoy a splash pad. We have 7 of them now in the city of Tucson, and we have more of them to come. But they're definitely a popular and trending amenity that the public really wants. They tend to be more water efficient because we recycle the water. The water splashes, it's recollected, it's filtered, and then it's pumped out again. So it definitely is something that we've had a pretty successful embracing from the Tucson community.
November 6, 2018 was a really red-letter day for the city of Tucson because voters said yes to Proposition 407, a $225 million bond package for capital improvements via general obligation bonds. That funds like playgrounds, sport fields, splash pads, right, pools, and recreation centers. So where are we in that that program? What's the chronology right
so
now?
So we're pretty fortunate. So that one was broken down into different phases. Obviously, you can't do
everything
all the projects
at once.
Yeah. And it was intended to be a 10-year program. So phase one is almost substantially complete, and we are even touching projects that are in phase two. So some of the highlights that I would say is Gunny Barreras Park. About 3 weekends ago, we just opened it back up after adding a giant splash pad, a playground, walking path, pickleball courts. So a huge investment in the Southside community and has been well received. We've done new playgrounds. We've done walking path refurbishments. Joaquin Marietta is another big project that we're about to go into permitting and anticipating to break ground before the end of the year. So Prop 407 has really allowed us to address what is an aged infrastructure and rebuild some of our parks for the next generation. And it's a great investment. I'm super excited about everything that we do and every project that we complete because that just means more public enjoyment.
What's the update on Fort Lowell Park at the pond?
So Fort Lowell Park, the pond at Fort Lowell.
Yeah.
Recently, with all the increased of heat, We've had an algae bloom that has made the algae levels what is deemed toxic. We worked with a scientist to help us to evaluate the water quality there.
Hope it won't kill all those little turtles.
No. So the good thing is that we had enough advanced notice that we're working with a pretty significant volunteer group to relocate the turtles out of the pond over to Silver Bell Golf Course. They have massive lakes there. And then once the turtles are relocated out, we'll be able to treat the water for the algae and get the levels back to where they need to be. We do encourage people not to go and randomly drop off turtles into our ponds and lakes. They're not built to hold a lot of animals.
So is that how the whole turtle population kind of came about?
Well, it does seem that we get a lot of volunteered donations to our parks where we have ponds or lakes. We do try to discourage folks from doing that self-population. But yeah, what basically happens is you just get a few and then they just start populating. And then it gets to a point where sometimes the capacity of the water body is exceeded by the population. And so currently right now, we're not saying that the turtles contributed to the poor water quality, but in order to address the poor water quality and for the safety of the turtles, we need to relocate them.
How many turtles are we talking about? A couple hundred?
That's what we think. Currently, we have moved 105, and based on the volunteer group, they think there's at least that many more to move.
How are they moving the turtles? Operation Turtle Moves.
So
it's a slow move.
The literal turtle power is harnessed through it. So they are fortunate to have a gentleman that uses a special net that he's able to catch them. And then they're relocated to a holding pool, like a little kiddie pool. And then our staff go with the big rubber bucket trash cans, which we transfer them there, and then we drive them over to Silver Bell. And so far, they've done two trips, so we're thinking there's probably at least three or more in our future.
Okay, so, and of course, so many birds, especially in the winter season, migrate through that area and use that pond. But, you know, when we see the big spray that they have there, is that just kind of to I don't know what the right word is.
It's an aerator. It adds oxygen into the water.
Yes.
And that's why we worked with a scientist. He was testing the oxygen levels of the water, and they were fine. It's really just the algae that we were suffering a problem with.
All right, Lara Hamway with us here on the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Got some more questions for Lara about the future of our parks. It's a huge footprint, 131 parks, 33,000, almost 33. You don't need that extra work, do you? 3,300 acres, which is big enough. We'll be right back with Lara and it's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They've got a beautiful 13-acre site. Anything you could think of for your garden, I'm darn sure you'll find it over there, including some incredible Talavera pottery as part of their business. They call it Zocalo Village. Green Things, 53 years in business. Their website is greenthingsaz.com and their sister business, zocalovillage.com. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studios, and we are with Lara Hamwe. She is the director of the City of Tucson Parks and Recreation Department. When we think of our own Central Park, we think of Reed Park. Lara, there was the master plan. Give us an update. There was some, I don't want to call it confusion, but there was concern over some of the ball fields. What's the latest on the park?
So we went through the entire master plan process, which included multiple surveys for public input into what they considered a priority for Reed. To be honest, some of the early input sessions didn't have a lot of priority being placed on the baseball field. So when we put out three different concepts, which were just to trigger thoughts and feedback, is when we really got the attention of the baseball community, and they we set up a meeting and they explained to us how important the history behind those fields are and why it's important that they stay part of the park. And so the final concept for Reed Park and what the master plan will convey is those four fields staying, the annex staying, and us building around them and trying to also enhance their use.
Golf courses, is that under your portfolio as well?
Yes. Yeah, so there are five golf courses in the city that that are under the city's ownership, and mm-hmm. they fall under parks, but mm-hmm. we have a management company.
So we are not, we, and I don't play golf, but I'm, I understand that we as Tucsonans, Americans, aren't playing as much golf. So we have to look at what do we want to do with these five remaining golf courses? I mean, is there still a lot of interest in those five?
So it's quite interesting. During COVID, mm-hmm. we saw an uptick in actual play and mm-hmm. revenue across all the golf courses. And because of that, we were able to take some of the increased revenue and invest in remodeling the restaurants and doing some improvements. An interesting development or turn is we've partnered with a local disc golf association. And they've installed a disc golf course over at El Rio. And so we are trying now out traditional golf mm-hmm. and disc golf.
Disc golf?
Yeah, it's like Frisbee golf.
Like Frisbee golf?
Yes.
How does it work?
So they have these metal stanchions that you throw the Frisbee at, and they're each one is worth different points. And so they basically play through the same fashion as golf does. There's different pars or technicalities. And it's so far it's working out pretty well. And so what we are looking at is if you can have multiple uses of the golf courses, you can still preserve the tradition of golf. But you could bring in a different audience, and that also maintains revenue.
Then you've got the pickleball. Is that still, you know, it was a huge sensation, and is it still a big deal?
Oh, yes. I would say almost weekly I'm asked for more pickleball courts.
Really?
It's a growing sport. It really is something that's friendly to the joints. It's any age can play. Very popular. So we have, we just recently opened courts at Himmel, and we are currently in design process for new courts at Palo Verde Park. We did add some courts at Gunny Barreras Park. And so the moment we add anything new, they're instantaneously successful and active.
Well, I know I've seen some of the pickle ballers when I occasionally, I probably should do it more, and I will, as the very warm temperatures are going to be upon us. I walk over at the indoor track at the Udall Center, and I have been amazed at all the pickleballers.
Yeah.
I mean, folks of all ages love that sport.
It's true. It's true. And that is not just unique to Tucson. That's worldwide. I mean, you just Google on YouTube and you'll find tons of videos, instructional videos, and people who are huge fans of pickleball. There's private entities that have pickleball clubs. Mm-hmm. And so really, it is a very fast growing sport.
I mean, for folks that don't know what it is, it's kind of like table tennis in some ways.
But
how would you describe it?
It's kind of like a merge of table tennis with racquetball.
With a little bit of badminton maybe thrown in.
It is. It's got a larger ball, so it's easier for you. It's great for eye-hand coordination. The paddle mimics a ping pong paddle almost. And the court is small. You can actually fit, I believe it's two pickleball courts on one tennis court.
Oh.
And so some of the older tennis courts that are not being utilized as much, we've converted to pickleball courts.
All right, let's talk about the turf. That's a huge area about keeping our parks. I don't know, it's very hard in this climate to keep them green. I mean, you come from Miami-Dade County. There's a little bit of a difference in the way the green grass grows down there. But how would you say generally the turf is looking?
I mean, this year seems like with the winter rains certainly helped us.
The delayed onset of the temperatures like we're going to experience next week over 110.
Right.
But that has helped, hasn't it?
It has helped, though I think a lot of people don't know that you need the soil temperature to be 55 degrees for the root structure to start growing. And generally that doesn't start happening until late May.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
55 degrees?
Yeah. So even though your ambient temperature could be very warm, if the soil, if the ground is not that warm, then the sod hasn't woken up yet. So now you'll start to really see the green up. We're currently doing a lot of aerification and maintenance on our fields because we're trying to build that health, that soil health and that turf health, which will last us into the fall. We're also experimenting with two new different types of turf that are supposedly a longer green period of time, but we won't know until we actually try it out here in Tucson.
It's hard, though, because you've got soccer and all these other things going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's what sports turf is for, and a lot of money and science has gone into what's the most resilient for youth sports to use. But these two different types of turf, not only are they recommended for sports use, but they're supposed to be 10 to 11 months more of green time.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, we won't know. So we're installing now in July, and then we'll see how it does in its first year.
All right. So let's go back to this Proposition 407. The first phase is complete, correct?
Yes.
So we're in what now? What's phase two?
So each phase has different projects that are listed. Phase two, I had mentioned before, Joaquin Murrieta. We're going to be building a brand new park called Barrio Nopal.
Where is that going to be?
Barrio Nopal is on the south side. Oh, man. And off the top of my head, I can't tell you the cross streets.
All right.
But it's a brand new park that's definitely needed because there's not a park within a 10-minute walk of most of the neighbors that will benefit from it. And that is a smaller park. It's about 1.4 acres that'll have a playground, a splash pad, walking path, and I think it's a really great opportunity anytime you can bring a new park to a community.
In your business, do you look at a population, say, of the city of Tucson, and then you see how many parks we have? Would you say we're underserved or about right or where?
I definitely think we're on the lower end only because our population is growing. And there is a measurement of a 10-minute walk for
every... Yeah, I heard you say 10 minutes. That must be some measurement in your business.
Yeah, so the Trust for Public Land has adopted that as what is called an equal access to all park amenities. So a 10-minute walk is also a quarter mile radius from your home.
Yeah. I did not know that. That's why I do this show, to learn something every day. And now I know about the 10-minute rule in the parks and recreation business. All right, Lara Hamway, always a pleasure. Lara has been the Parks and Rec Director for the city of Tucson. She was a good acquisition coming from Miami-Dade County about 2.5 years ago. She settled in with her donkeys and her goats and her dogs on her at her home. She is obviously an animal lover, which is a good thing. Lara, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, midway show of the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Congressman Juan Ciscomani joins us from the nation's capital on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. That's next.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust green things. A family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition. Without further ado, let's go on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management of the nation's capital. United States Representative Juan Ciscomani, Republican, representing Arizona's 6th Congressional District. Congressman Ciscomani is both the only freshman congressman and the only member of the Arizona Congressional Delegation on the House Appropriations Committee, and he's been very busy with that committee. Congressman, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thank you so much for having me on. I know that we had given everybody a heads up that I was in between appropriations votes and I was going to step out to take this call. We just got called back in there. It's my turn to vote in just like 45 seconds. So I'm going to walk down the hall with you, so it may get a little noisy.
That's okay.
As I head over to the room. And hopefully I can jump right back in after I vote. But this is the week for appropriations, last week and this week. And that's what I was looking forward to talking to you about, all the wins that we're taking back to the district so far. It's literally 10-hour meetings at a time. So we're halfway through the one for today. But I'm going to need to jump out, and I'm going to call right back in, okay?
I'll talk to you in just a little bit. All right, and I'll talk about some of these funds that should be coming to Tucson and surrounding areas while you go ahead and do that vote. Congressman Ciscomani, $859,000 for the Northern Cochise Community Hospital in Wilcox. Those funds will be used for structural upgrades to the main entry area. And the emergency department, which is currently 50 years old. Let's see, $2 million for the town of Pima, Pima's volunteer fire department. The money will allow for the construction of new multi-use facility to serve as the town's only fire station and community use facility. Then what else do we have here? $1.8 million for Western Rural Water and Central Arizona Irrigation and Drainage District. The money will fund new wells and pipelines to improve existing irrigation systems, helping to replace lost surface water caused by the unprecedented drought in the Colorado River Basin. I think there's one more here. For the town of Duncan, $274,000. The town of Duncan and the Hunter Estates Drainage Migration and Design Area in Duncan, funding for that Eastern Arizona community. Funding can be used for 20 drains to immediately mitigate ongoing flood issues in the Hunter Estates development. Also fund 21,000 feet of street for transportation, usability, and conductivity. So that's Juan Ciscomani securing $4.9 million for healthcare, water infrastructure, and community projects in initial appropriations bill. And the congressman had to step away for a moment or two, I guess, to make a vote that seemed to happen right in the middle of the interview. Then those things can happen in live radio. So why don't we do this, John? Why don't we take the commercial? We'll take the commercial break early. Hopefully we'll have Congressman Ciscomani back with us on the air when we come back. So let's take the break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare.
Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Live radio always gets interesting. We have Congressman Ciscomani back on the line. He had to step away for a vote. He is Congressman Ciscomani, both the only freshman lawmaker and only member of the Arizona Congressional Delegation on the House Appropriations Committee. All right, Congressman, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm back. Okay. Thanks for that break, Bill. It happened, of course, right at the time that you led me on is when they called the vote, but that's the way it always happens.
All right. So I mentioned during that, while you stepped away, that you were successful in securing, quite a bit of funding, nearly $5 million, some projects, and I went over those projects, so that's good news.
Yeah, it's good. It's good news for the district. Now, from what we were able to submit 15 requests. That's the limit that they give each of us. So the ones that you just read off are just the beginning. We still have another 10 or so that we feel very optimistic about. You can't make any promises, but it seems that it's all going to go well. Of course, it helps that the applicants did a good job with the application. We, of course, advocate for it. And then the fact that I'm on the committee allows me to push for them pretty directly. And that's one of the advantages for our district, that I'm on this committee deciding where these resources go and that they get spent well and wisely and responsibly and efficiently. And of course, investing in our district and the things that you read off to the listeners are ways that we can do that.
How about the debt limit bill? Were you happy the way it ended up?
Well, I think it wasn't perfect, and no one claimed it was, but I am happy overall. I'm proud of the vote that we took on that. It was really much better than the alternative. And by the alternative, I mean one, default on our debts, which was never an option. It couldn't have been. And the other one, do a clean lift with no changes on the behavior of spending.
Keep
and I
got to
tell you, Washington has a spending addiction. I've been here for 6 months. I knew that before I got here, but being here, it was clear that that's the case. And that's something on both sides of the aisle, Bill. I got to tell you, when you look at the last nine times that the debt ceiling was lifted, it was lifted under Republican presidents and Democrat presidents, Republican majorities in the House and Democrat majorities in the House. And the debt ceiling was lifted without any kind of behavior in the spending. It just kept going up and up. It's like maxing out your credit card. And instead of spending less, you just increase the limit. That's what the government did over and over again the last couple of decades. And that's what got us to where we are today. So with the debt ceiling vote that we took a few weeks ago, we're actually spending less money next year than we're spending this year. There are no new taxes, no new government programs. We're tightening the belt on government, yet meeting all the requirements that we have on spending. Specifically, important to note that Social Security and Medicare were not touched, as we said they weren't going to. And also veterans actually saw an increase in allocation there, because that's one of the main priority areas for us. So I'm happy of where it is and where we're going with it. Not perfect. There are things that I wish we would have done differently, but we have a divided Congress with a House on the Republican, Senate on the Democrats, and the Democrat president. So it got signed, and our government still works, and it needs to work better, though.
What about the border?
No, the border continues to be one of the big focuses. Actually, this markup, this appropriations bill that we just voted on was the Homeland Security allocation bill. This is also one of the few areas as well that has seen an increase in spending instead of a decrease in spending. This area that has more resources going to the border on technology, on agents, on their pay, on those kind of resources that they've been asking for. Also to interdict more of the illegal activity on the border, partnerships with local communities. These are all things that are on this bill that I'm happy to be supporting.
Are you still calling for the Homeland Security Secretary to resign, Mr. Secretary Mayorkas?
Absolutely, Bill. Yes. I was convinced that he was doing a poor job before getting here. After getting here and looking at even more information, having access to more information, seeing even in a closer way, not only being close at home to the border, but being close to the policymaking here. And I'm even more convinced. I had the opportunity of being a guest on the Homeland Security Committee when we had a panel on this. And he has he continues to fail at his job, and he's not worthy of this position. There's no way he can turn it around at this point. He's not willing to, and I think that's clear.
And what was there were some specifics, the fentanyl crossing into the country, the end of Title 42, or those were a couple of items that you're not at all happy with?
Those are all good examples, and the numbers don't lie. When you see the increase in all the area that you just mentioned, that those are facts. They're not opinions. They're not, do I think he's doing a good job or not? These are clear facts backed up by numbers. One area that has me very, very upset and concerned is the area of unaccompanied minors. You have 85,000 unaccompanied children that have reached our border that the government, under Homeland Security and Health and Human Services, have turned over to so-called sponsors. And now they can track these kids. They don't know where they are. 85,000 of them lost in the system, in the country. And the New York Times did a story on this where they found that many of them are involved in child labor camps and sex and human trafficking schemes and all kinds of terrible things. And these kids were once in U.S. custody under the care, per se, of Mayorkas and Secretary Becerra. And they have completely lost track of these kids. And now they're in our country suffering even more than they were before. So if you look at the humanitarian piece or the border security angle of it, he hasn't done a good job in any aspect of his job.
Do you have any update on that veterans workforce bill that you were sponsoring?
Yes, absolutely. So that was my first bill that made it all the way to the floor, the vet tech bill. And that bill passed with over 409 yeses. So it had wide bipartisan support and now goes to the Senate. Just to remind people, this bill focuses on training active duty military before they leave active duty so that they can walk into technical careers and hit the ground running and actually have success also, just like they did while serving our country after service, and have more options for their careers. So I'm very proud of that bill supporting our veterans, and also very happy that it made it all the way through past the House with flying colors from both sides.
All right.
I think, a good example of bipartisan work that can be done still here, even in a divided Congress.
Before we let you go, what has to be done here before the end of this month, before the break here at the 4th of July?
Yeah, great question. So before the break, we're going to get through 6 of the 12 appropriation bills. That's where we're focusing on. That's half of the discretionary spending that will be decided before we go on the 4th of July break. We have another bill today, legislative bill, and then we have 2 more tomorrow. Defense is one of them. We had agriculture last week as well. So we, and veterans last week. So we're going to get done through 6 of these, and then we're going to tackle the other 6 in July before the August recess.
All right, Congressman Ciscomani, thank you very much on a very busy day for you. I guess there's been a bunch of busy days lately for you.
Every day seems busy up here, but thank you for the time, Bill, and Laura and I are keeping you and your family in our prayers as well. God bless, brother.
Thank you very much. Representative Juan Ciscomani with us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back on the live line now. Keith Rosenblum. I asked Keith to be available for us. He listened to part of that interview. We didn't know how long Congressman Ciscomani would be with us. He was right in the middle of some voting issues. But hey, Keith, how are you, sir?
Bill, I'm doing very good, and I think in 30 years I've known you, I don't think I've ever given you that flattery of a good question, Bill. I think I've spent 30 years telling you that was a really mediocre question, or I don't address it at all.
Well, anyway. When you were working for Congressman Colby, I think once or twice Mr. Jim Colby may have said, "Good question, Bill."
It's always when that happens, and I see this in Mexico all the time, and I'll actually a kind of a trick of the trade. You would any reporter that hears it should be wary, because you're not in a position where you actually want to be complimented by anybody in government. So
that's
let me
true.
Start off the heretical part of Keith Rosenblum saying, if anyone tells me good question, they've distance, they put themselves a couple notches above me.
Okay.
But anyway.
We'll
give
the
go ahead, because he's new, okay? Go ahead and give him some pause time.
Okay, a couple of things I want to just get your take on. The congressman said Homeland Security just got a big bump up in spending. And also I want your take on the congressman's continued call for the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas to step aside, saying he is unworthy of his position.
Well, I don't think it comes down to a guy. That would be a symbolic act. People do little jigs or, you know, revel in somehow the one person thing. We've gotten rid of that one person. In particular, Homeland Security and CBP are huge, sprawling agencies. And are you really going to hold one guy accountable for it? I don't see those failures as being the cause themselves. Now, there could be other failings that we don't know about. But insofar as those, the lost children, that is not a commissioner or a secretary's responsibility. Now, you could do the honorable thing, which is to say, I resign. You could also do the honorable thing and commit harakiri, or whatever it's called, where you kill yourself. I mean, there's any number of things that give us a momentary smugness that say, look what we've accomplished, look at that bad person going. But it's an institutional failure. It's not one guy at the helm who made any difference at all. So I don't see the big deal there. In fact, you can lose what expertise he had. Just have oversight. You know, my view is have oversight. Don't revel in the downfall of one person or think that that's a properly symbolic gesture.
Right.
I don't see the value.
We've thrown a lot of money at the border, and you and I didn't get off the bus yesterday on this question of more and more border money in the form of Homeland Security funds. Your take on that, Keith Rosenblum?
Keith Rosenblum also thinks that's a waste of time, a waste of resources and a waste of time. We think that money is the solution, and it's not. All of the disastrous, apocalyptic predictions for what would happen at the conclusion of Title 42, none of them came true. They were all being used to, you know, to paint this sky falling scenario, and it didn't come true. And money is not. Policies are. You can do an awful lot. As President Lopez Obrador, I hate citing him, has shown us in Mexico, you can actually get a lot out of government by squeezing and twisting and changing mission, as opposed to simply thinking that the solution is a 5% or a 10% increase. That is not the, in my world anyway, there are so many other solutions that actually could involve less money anyway. So, we're always going to play this game of escalating. Hey, I have an idea, Bill. Instead of only having the Border Patrol at the border and at the Tubac checkpoint, I have an idea. Let's build some more border stations within the country, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get some more money to do that. I mean, this is the rationale. A lot, if you talk to a lot of people about the drug war, they'll say that the drug war needs to continue, let's see, because we've always been fighting it. In other words, yeah. You end up with this mentality of we do things because we like doing it. That's what we've always done, right? So to me, that's the danger, and I hope that Representative Ciscomani, who's my rep, by the way, I believe he is, I double struck, doesn't fall into that, the thinking that Washington has those solutions or that money is going to be the solution to them. No, there's local issues, there's local politics, there's issues that have to do with recognizing that the reason we have people coming from South Central America and some from Mexico is because those economies are unstable, because they have violence at home. We are not going to accomplish much by having a couple more agents in the Tucson sector or the El Paso sector or the Yuma sector.
And, of course, in the so-called war on drugs, now it's fentanyl.
Fentanyl is one more, it's a rallying cry for people, but only solution is an education program that says to the Keith Rosenblum families of the world and everybody else, you might not want to take a drug that is going to kill you.
Yeah.
Again, where's the individual responsibility? Since when is that a government function to tell people that you don't want to take, you know, fentanyl, and then to try to remedy it when they do? These are things to me that are about individual responsibility and have zilch to do with the imperative for government to do anything. I would rather see that money all spent on halfway houses, all spent on I forget the name of the drug that you can take that is essentially a protection for it. I'll think of the name in a second, but kind of an immunity drug when you have an overdose of any kind that's now become very fashionable and, you know, first responders and also.
Where they give.
So what are we going to do? We're going to go after the people who are. We're going to go after the free market. I mean, really, does anyone have a member? Does anyone remember the Purple Gang? Do they remember what went on in Chicago, Cleveland, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, the East Coast, with all the different groups? It's a futile battle. We are never ever going to. The word interdiction should just be eliminated from the English language. We are never going to interdict anything. Whether somebody poor and has a profit motive, they're going to supply us with fentanyl, heroin, cocaine, crack, marijuana, whatever it is. Tax it and make it all legal. In my view, I think Jim Colby. I'm glad this came up. Jim actually believed that. I think I can reveal now, however much time after Jim's death and after a lot of years after his time in office, Jim knew that. He knew. He was a libertarian at heart. He knew that it was that the only way was to legalize and tax in all these areas.
Yeah.
And, but he could never say that. He would have been voted out of office
of
the next
course.
Day because, hey, we got to appear to be hard on crime.
Yeah. Got to run, Keith. Always a pleasure. Thanks for contributing to the show today. Thank you, Keith.
Talk to you.
All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Kind of winging it today, but that's what it is. Live radio, Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Tomorrow, back with you. Have a great day.